You know, it's funny, as Bill came to me a long time ago with this, and I did keep putting him off. I said, Bill, you know, we gotta wait. And there's a reason, you know, that you shouldn't enter into ministry or leadership of a church lightly by any stretch of the imagination. I've done it a number of times, and one time I was actually chairman of the elders, and the pastor came to me and he said, I'm leaving. I'm going to go. Actually, he was going up to another position within the denomination. He said, good luck. Have fun finding a new pastor. So it's like, wow, this is great. But today I'm going to, for those of you who missed the eclipse, which I understand is nearly everybody in Albuquerque. Did anybody see it? Oh, you guys saw it. Okay. The East Mountains was clear then? Okay. No? Oh, it parted. Oh, cool. I got some eclipse pictures for you. The one on the left is pretty cool. It shows the cross. And have you ever thought about the fact that the Earth's apparent diameter, or the moon's apparent diameter, is exactly the same as the sun's apparent diameter? Not off by any amount whatsoever. So that the moon completely covers up the ring of the sun and allows the outside of the sun to be seen. You ever thought about that? You realize how difficult that is to do? But I'm going to talk about that as well. But today I'm going to talk about apologetics. And for those of you who don't know what apologetics is, it's pretty well summarized in 1 Peter 3:15. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord, of course. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. And this is very, very important. If you're going to witness to people, especially people who are skeptical. I'm glad to see Steve here because Steve has got a scientific background and can maybe correct my mathematics and scientific notation and tell me where I'm wrong. But to me, it's fascinating how the God is revealed through his creation. And a lot of people, especially in schools, are not taught this. This is something they're taught, in fact, the opposite of. But this 1 Peter 3:15 verse says two things that are really important. One is be prepared, which means in advance, know this stuff, right? To everyone who asks you, so it's people who ask, to give the reason for the hope you have. Now, what does reason mean? Reason is the factual basis for what you believe. And so you kids today, I'm glad to see so many of you here. I would love if you pay attention. Because this is important information. I will guarantee you, and you can ask any adult here, in science class, in college, somewhere along the line, your faith is going to be challenged. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. The first thing I want to talk about is a little misunderstanding that is often not understood very well. And that is, can logic and knowledge lead to salvation? You know, can Mr. Spock be a Christian? The answer is no, because the demons have the knowledge, according to James 2:19, but they are not saved. So it's not by knowledge that you're saved. Ephesians 2:8-9 doesn't say, and it's for by knowledge that you are saved through faith. No, it says by grace you're saved. Grace means you don't deserve it. You didn't choose it. It's God choosing you, as Bill said earlier. It's by grace you're saved through faith and not from yourselves, the gift of God, not by works so that no one can boast. Again, if you read that, you'll find that the path to God does not lead through knowledge. Okay, so I don't want to mislead anybody into thinking, oh, well, if I knew everything, I'd be a Christian, right? But I will tell you this for a fact, that lies about the creation and lies about science can lead people away. And so if you go to any philosophy department in any college, practically, in the United States, you will find exactly zero Christians. And why is that? It's because they've been taught that the creation does not point to God. It's all about evolution. It's all about natural processes. So we're going to give you some factual knowledge, especially you kids. You need to pay attention. And so we'll get into that in a minute. But why are we studying apologetics? Remember, Bill came to me and he said, you can preach about anything you want. And I said, well, I'm going to preach about how bad pastors are. No, sorry. That's not what I was thinking. But, you know, there were a lot of things that came to mind. You know, I'm a worship leader, right? So why don't we teach about worship? And I thought, you know, what's the most important thing? What is the most important thing? Most important thing is salvation. It's your salvation. And what's goes along with that is staying with the faith. And if you remember the parable of the sower, remember the seeds were sowed and some of them fell on shallow soil and they came up and they were doing fine. And then the sun came and they withered away. Well, in our culture, the sun is often the science and the people that are in academia who challenge these young people, you guys, who will be challenged after you leave school, and they lie to you. They lie to you a lot. They lie to you about everything. In fact, Jesus warned about this in John 8:44. You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He's a murderer from the beginning, not holding the truth, for there's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language. He is a liar and father of lies. So you guys are going to run into, if you haven't already, is there any adult here that has not run into to this situation where they've been challenged in their faith? Nobody. Nobody. So it will happen. You will be challenged. How are we doing? How are we doing on this? Not too well. This is the latest Barbera survey, and 70 to 75% of Christian youth leave the church after high school. So here you are, you raise this nice Christian kid. They're very well grounded in the faith. They've been baptized. They've been saved, and they go off from home, and they come back, and they're no longer going to church. They're no longer interested in things about Christ. And when you ask them, which, by the way, my son did this very thing, why is it? It's because they've been told lies. They've talked to people at college or on the job or wherever it might be, and they have they've been led down the primrose path. And here, and according to Barbera, this is not according to, you know, Christian sources, if you will. Christian youth are not being taught to examine the skeptical and atheistic views they encounter, and this is the main reason why they leave the church after high school. So we're going to do a good job today, hopefully, of at least giving you the basis to counter that. Let's start with the truth. It's always good to start with the truth before you start talking about lies, right? So what's the first statement in the Bible? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, right? So the first truth in the Bible is God created all this stuff. And furthermore, and we'll look at this in Romans in a minute, but he left evidence of his power. And it should be obvious that to anybody who looks around, and this is the beginning of wisdom. You have a built-in need to know your Creator. And it doesn't make any sense to you what is going on, why you're here, where all this stuff came from, what's your purpose in life. None of that makes any sense to you when you are an unbeliever. So Romans talks about this extensively. So if you guys want to pull out your Bible, you can just read it off the screen. But BSF is getting ready to go through Romans. And I do BSF, and I think several other people do it as well. That's a really, really good in-depth Bible study if you don't have one. And I believe on the East Mountains they meet on Tuesday night. But they also meet at Sandia Baptist Church down here. But Romans is an incredible book. And this is early in the book, and this is where Paul is talking about why humanity is condemned. And this is talking about the fact that we are without excuse. So you read this first time around, you think, oh, it's about God making himself apparent. But it's also about God's wrath. Let's read it together. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of the people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that the people are without excuse. You understand what that means? That means that you can look up, you can tap the side of this, you can stomp your foot, and you're touching God's creation. And God's creation is testifying to you. And if you can't hear it, it's because of the fact that you've blinded yourself. You put your hands over your eyes and you put your fingers in your ears so you can't see it. For although they knew God, this is just revealing a truth. Everybody knows God. Everybody knows God exists by looking at his creation. They neither glorified him nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools. This sound like the philosophy department down at the local university? Sure does. So we're going to, again, a little bit later, we're going to talk about the evidence, the scientific evidence for creation. But I'm giving you a little bit of a background here. And one of the last things I'm going to talk about background-wise is miracles. This is a key point of contention between atheists and believers. How many atheists do you know believe in miracles? Not very many. Zero. Why is that? Well, if an atheist were to believe in a miracle, then they would have to believe in the miracle maker. So an atheist, a true atheist, which, believe it or not, are fairly rare, will have a naturalistic explanation for everything. And we'll show later how that just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So when they're confronted by intelligent design, they will often invoke aliens. This is hilarious. I mean, this is funny stuff. If you go read some of the latest scientific work, they say, you know, hey, it's aliens. And you go, okay, well, where did the aliens come from? So it's kind of a circular argument. But you get to understanding this a little bit better when you read 1 Corinthians 2:14. Paul said that the person without the Spirit does not accept the things that come from the Spirit, but considers them to be foolish and cannot understand them because they are discerned only through the Spirit. There's another guy in the Bible, Solomon, who dealt with this very topic. Solomon tried to find God through knowledge. Did you know that? It's the book of Ecclesiastes. And he wrote all this, all of his experiences down. And you may know about Ecclesiastes being a bit of a dreary book, you know, vanities, vanities, you know, nothing means anything. But in the middle of Ecclesiastes, Solomon concluded that he could not understand the work of God. In fact, Ecclesiastes 11:5, and I've got a coffee cup with this verse on it, you know, because it's a really cool verse. As you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in the mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. So is it possible to understand God through knowledge? The Bible says no. It's not possible to understand God through knowledge. So you can't learn your way to God. Okay, what's the point? Why do we have science? Why do we have all this stuff? And the point is, according to Ecclesiastes, is that we can't understand it, but we can gain God's wisdom by looking at his creation. The fear of the Lord is the thing that is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom. And the fear of the Lord is acknowledging that God is who he is, the creator of the universe. If that doesn't scare you, I don't know what does. So true wisdom comes through God, through his creation, so that you can believe in him. The purpose of God's wisdom is to bring faith, and how God accomplishes his work is a mystery. And it's a mystery on purpose. You cannot understand it on purpose because God wants you to come to him. Okay? He wants you to come to him and get his knowledge. So anybody tells you, yep, we know, I know everything about everything, that guy's lying. That guy's lying to you. Okay, now I'm going to get into the meat of this. I don't have a huge amount of time, but here, this is the areas where faith and science tend to intersect. And again, I'm going to show that these are actually in general agreement. But did God create the universe? Is life created by God? Or is it, did it evolve from chemicals? Did God create man? Or did we evolve from the apes? Who is the God of the Bible? And is he revealed in the Bible? And Jesus Christ, is he the Messiah or just another man? So, again, quickly, I'm going to move on to the first big question. Did God create the world? And here's where we have a tremendous amount of scientific evidence to back us up. And there's two views here. One is God existed before time and created the universe, or the universe came to exist as a result of natural processes. But we have two laws of physics that support our case for God. The first and second law of thermodynamics. And I'm sure Steve is incredibly familiar with this. Most engineers are. This is a basic concepts of physics. And the first law of thermodynamics says matter or energy cannot be created or destroyed. So, hit that. That's your contradiction right there. Where did this come from? Where did this wall come from? This floor, this podium. So you look at this and you go, huh, at some point, the first law of thermodynamics was violated. And we say God created the heavens and the earth, right? We have an explanation for why this stuff exists. And guess what? Science doesn't. If you read the science explanation, they say, well, there's a big bang. And you go, okay, let's see. Time didn't exist, and there's a big bang, and everything came into existence. That sounds a bit like God. You know, you're invoking a miracle there, aren't you? But again, there's no explanation for how that happened. So there's no cause of the universe that is known to science. We have a cause of the universe, which is God. And it's the only explanation that makes sense. But it requires God. So atheists can't accept it. But it goes perfectly with Romans 1. Interestingly, both science and the Bible agree on one thing, which is time is began in the beginning. So there was a point before time in both systems, if you will, which I find kind of interesting. You start thinking about time and God and the Bible and Einstein and all that, your head will explode. I'm just not that clever. The next thing is the second law of thermodynamics, which requires systems like the universe or life become more disordered with time. If you want to understand this easily, throw a two-year-old in a room that's perfectly organized. Come back an hour later. It is less ordered. So the level of order is it needs to be established. In other words, in order for there to be more order in a system, there has to be an orderer, or a clock winder is what it's what it's called. The level of order required for even the simplest life is simply astonishing. So I'm going to sit on this example. It is vanishingly unlikely, and I'll talk about the numbers in a minute, that life will organize itself from chemicals. And that is a direct violation of the second law of thermodynamics. In the absence of an organizing force, things, systems, do not become self-organizing. It just doesn't happen. So, again, it's not the second suggestion of thermodynamics. It's the second law of thermodynamics. So, these two are very powerful arguments for a creator. But I'm going to go to a third argument, which is probability. Who here has heard of Hugh Ross? He's a very controversial guy. He is a Christian. He's a scientist. But he's done a tremendous amount of work on probability theory. And he went and looked at the probability that the Earth is a natural environment. So think about it. You're a fish in a fish tank, right? You're looking around. And you're talking to the other fish. And you go, hey, isn't it cool how the Sandia Mountains came down and this glass was formed in the front of our tank. And then this metal came out and it was formed this wraparound thing, and then there's water in there, and then there's this blue-green gravel, which is really kind of a gross color, and then the pump pumps air in, and isn't that cool how that happened by natural processes? You would say, those fish are pretty dumb. I can tell you from firsthand experience, fish are not dumb. I went to Heron for 2 days, and I threw everything at them. Nothing worked. But actually, fish are pretty smart. But the question is, do we live in a fish tank? So the probability is amazing. Hugh Ross looked at fine-tuning. The Earth's distance from the sun, the fact that there's a moon, the moon has to be a certain distance from the Earth, has to be a certain gravitational field, there has to be, and you go on and on. I mean, there's about 300 variables that are required to be fine-tuned in order for life to exist. So Hugh Ross calculated this, and I'm going to give you some perspective. How many here remember scientific notation? All right. Okay, every time you add 1 to the superscript, it's 10 times. 10 to the 1th power is 10. 10 to the 2nd power is 100. 10 to the 3rd power is 1,000. On and on and on. Okay, I'm going to give you a number here to give you some perspective. 10 to the 22nd. That is the number of bodies that there are in the universe. So you take a telescope, look up, start counting. 10 to the 22nd power. Big number. I'll give you another piece of perspective. 10 to the 22nd, it's also the number of grains of sand on all the beaches and all the deserts on all the earth. Okay? So next time you go to the beach, you'll pick some of that. Wow, look at all those galaxies and earths and suns and everything. You know, just think of that. It's mind-boggling. The chance that the Earth is a natural environment is 10 to the 282nd power. Remember I just talked about 10 to the 22nd? Remember every time you add one, it's 10 times? One in 10 to the 282nd power. That's a million, trillion, 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 trillion chance. One in that many. Okay? Guess what? According to science, that means we're living in a fish tank. Okay? You live in a fish tank. Somebody created this. Question is who? So our answer is God created the world. And it turns out science has even come to the conclusion that it's vanishingly unlikely that the Earth is a natural environment. Okay, again, moving quickly because I don't have a tremendous amount of time. So you guys need to listen faster. Okay, life from chemicals. This is another popular theory in evolution. You go and look in the science textbook, Biology Today or whatever it is, and they show you this experiment. They show you this beaker. It's got stuff in it. Somebody hit it with a lightning bolt, heated it up, cooled it down, looked at it under a microscope, and said, aha, amino acids, building blocks of life. Okay? Well, that was a very popular theory back before the science of DNA really got going. Because when the science of DNA got going, people started looking at the DNA and the genome, even of the simple life, like bacteria. And they found out, oh my goodness, it's really, really complicated. How complicated? It's more complicated than an F-15 aircraft. So you take an F-15 aircraft, all the drawings that go with, all the parts, all the things that have to happen, that's how complicated the simplest bacteria is. Oh, by the way, it also has to be running. So you can't just put all this stuff out there and say, come to life, F-15 aircraft, or come to life, bacteria. I can take a bacteria and I can puncture it, put it in a sterile environment, and it will not come into life, come back to life. All the stuff's there. The only thing I did was puncture the membrane. So even with all the chemicals and all the right amounts and all the right orders, it's not going to work because of this thing called life, which is the running part of things. So let me tell you how unlikely it is that life came from chemicals. You would have to believe that is just as likely or more likely that an F-15 aircraft would pop out of the side of the Sandia Mountains and fly away. Okay? That is how unlikely it is that life would evolve from chemicals. Even science now, because of all the things that have happened, have recognized this complexity. And they said, well, you know, we don't really have a good answer to that. So they came up with aliens. Aliens are good. I'm going to surprise you here. I'm going to say that the Bible supports evolution. The Bible does support evolution. In Genesis 1, it talks about the kinds. Talks about the kinds. So everything is according to its kind. Well, what's a kind? A kind is a genome. It's a set of genetic information that's contained within a species. So the Bible says that everything is according to its kind, right? Well, it goes right along with microevolution. And I can show you that a Doberman Pinscher and a toy poodle are both dogs. They have the same genes. There's a Doberman Pinscher in your toy poodle if you are patient enough to breed it over and over again. So macroevolution and microevolution are two things that get mixed up, and they mix them up on purpose. It's a lie because they can show you microevolution, and then they say, oh, yeah, by the way, macroevolution is just like that. It's not just like that at all. The reason it's not like that is because you need new genetic information to have macroevolution. So if you don't have an eyeball on your planet, and you need an eyeball, you need the plans on how to build an eyeball in your DNA, okay? Question is that going to come about as a result of natural events? Let me ask you this. Do you think if you type random letters in a computer, you could write an exact copy of Moby Dick? How long do you think that'll last? One letter? Two? Maybe? Three? The genetic code required to build the DNA, to build an eyeball, or some other very complex structure that's irreducible, it's not usable unless it's completely there, is much more complicated than Moby Dick. So thinking that you can add a bunch of random little changes and come up with Moby Dick is just as ridiculous as thinking that you can add DNA to the genome. Just doesn't work. So there's lots of problems with the current theory. In fact, it doesn't even pass the giggle test. These large jumps in evolution are the current theory. So they're saying you have two dogs that breed and out pops a cat. That's what they're saying, is that these are big, big jumps in evolution, because they've proven through various scientific methods that macroevolution doesn't, or the addition of small changes together to make a big change doesn't work. So you're not going to be able to add to the genetic code by typing random letters into a computer. So therefore, you need the entire Moby Dick to come, this kind of happen. It's a ridiculous theory, and it has many, many problems. But you're not going to hear that in science class. You're going to hear about microevolution, and they're going to tell you how well that works. It does. It works great. Let me move on to another subject. That is, did man evolve from apes, or are we a special creation of God? And the Bible says that we're created in God's image. We are different than the animals. Science says, guess what? We're 98% common DNA with apes. And that's absolutely true. You go look at the DNA sequences, 98% is common. Also 40% common with bananas. So you could say I'm 40% bananas, and you would be completely accurate, and I wouldn't be insulted. Again, that's irrelevant, because macroevolution doesn't work. It doesn't work. So you can't explain that additional 2%. You can't explain what makes us unique. Also, our genetic code is very uniform compared to chimpanzees, apes, and that kind of thing. And so it does indicate a relatively recent event that caused us to come into existence, which is kind of weird, and science doesn't really understand that. And have you guys heard this thing about negative blood types? I thought it was pretty cool. Anybody hear about this? Anybody here have a negative blood type? Ah, you all. I knew it. The fact that negative blood types exist is a riddle, because that negative blood types are not compatible with positive blood types. And the idea is that the human race should have extinguished itself long ago because of negative blood types. I don't really understand the biology, but I thought that was interesting, because at the end of this article it says, and by the way, if you have a negative blood type, you're probably descended from aliens. Thought it was great. Aliens again. Aliens! Alien children. Alright. Talk among yourselves. There we go. Ah, still going. So anyway, what about the Bible? The Bible itself is backed up by boatloads of archaeological evidence. Any place you dig in Israel, they find stuff and they look at it and they piece it together, and guess what? Consistent with the Bible. There's no other book out there that has the archaeological backup that the Bible has. So there's actually very few people that disagree with the history of the Bible. There are some things in there that are controversial, but by and large, the archaeological evidence for the Bible is very, very strong. Also, you have to look at the extra biblical accounts. Those are also support the Bible. So there's no other book out there, holy book, that is supported as well as the Bible. But the big one is prophecy and consistency. If you take a look at the prophecies in the Bible, you say, how in the world were these Old Testament prophets able to predict the future? It's absolutely amazing. Guess what? They're divinely inspired. That's your proof that the Bible is divinely inspired. So I'm going to take a look. Again, I'm running out of time, so I'm fine. I can smell the... I can smell it. Anyway, messianic prophecy. Anybody here study messianic prophecy at all? Anybody? Okay, well, besides you, Bill. Messianic prophecy is amazing. I talked about this at Christmas time, if you'll remember. I talked about how Jesus Christ was able to fulfill all these prophecies, even though he had no control, where he was born, who his ancestors were, the time of his birth. I mean, nobody can control that. And then going beyond that, are all these other prophecies that he fulfilled specifically, his crucifixion, his resurrection, where he was buried, all those things. So again, how likely is it, going back to probability, that Jesus Christ could fulfill all these prophecies? And let's take 8 prophecies. That's a good number, right? That's 1 in a trillion. One person in a trillion could fulfill 8 prophecies randomly. Well, what about 48? Remember that big number I gave you? It's bigger than that. It's 1 in 10 to the 157th power. Okay? Remember what 10 to the 22nd power looked like? Big number. How many prophecies do you think were fulfilled? Messianic prophecies. How many? 300. 300 plus. Wow, that's pretty good evidence, in my opinion. So the Bible's consistency on the Messiah, and it starts from Genesis. The Messiah is in the book of Genesis. Talks about him in the book of Genesis, all the way through every book of the Bible. I think there's even a song that says something like that. Anyway, I haven't learned it. But it's amazing that it talks about the Messiah. And if you take a look just at the Messianic prophecies, it's absolutely astonishing how accurate they are. And no other conclusion except for this book is divinely inspired. But when it comes down to it, our faith comes down to Jesus Christ and his resurrection. And this is where things get really interesting. Was Christ resurrected or was he not? And again, in Corinthians, Paul talks about this. For what I received, I pass to you as first and foremost, that Christ died for our sins. He's buried and was raised on the third day. And he appeared to Cephas, then the 12, and after that, more than 500 brothers and sisters at the same time. Most of them are still living and some have fallen asleep. Appeared to James and then to the apostles. Last appeared to me, him abnormally born. Jesus Christ, after his resurrection, did a lot of stuff. Went from Galilee back down to Jerusalem, had this big following. There's very little doubt that he was around after his crucifixion. Some people say, well, he was just wounded on the cross. He really didn't get killed. Really? Really? The Romans were really good at killing people. They didn't screw it up. And there is no account of anyone ever surviving a crucifixion. And the way Jesus was crucified was especially brutal. So him surviving that crucifixion would have been, again, astoundingly unlikely. So the evidence of his crucifixion, his resurrection, and his ascension into heaven is very, very strong. And if you take a look at what happened to the disciples after the resurrection, it's amazing. These guys ran back to being fishermen, and they were scared to death that they were going to be executed. And then after they saw Jesus, guess what? They are very bold, to the point of being killed. I mean, these guys were ready to go. And they were ready to give up everything, including their own lives. Nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to do that unless what they've seen is absolutely convincing. Nobody's going to die for a false Messiah. And there were many, many, many false messiahs that you've never heard of that came out around that time. So the gospel is extremely strong and backed up by evidence. So here's the bottom line. And again, I just touched the surface. There's a tremendous amount of information out there online. There are books that have been written. How many people have seen Lee Strobel's book, The Case for Christ? If you haven't read that, if you're a youth, highly recommend it. In fact, people that come to me and say, well, I want to know about God, I have copies of that. I hand it to them. And I say, read this. Lee Strobel started out as an atheist and started out hostile toward the gospel. As he examined the issues, as he examined all the stuff I've just given you, he became a Christian. And in fact, is now around declaring the faith, if you will, declaring how faith is in harmony with the creation. So here's the summary. There's only one explanation for what we see. That's God. God and science are not in conflict. So no matter what your science teacher tells you, it's not the case. And if you don't believe it, look it up. That's why we have Google, right? The truth is the best antidote for the lies. So if you are being exposed to lies, be ready with the truth. So I'd like to thank you for your attention.